Sounds True presents Mantra, Sacred Words of Power, Session 7, The Feminine Principle in Mantra Practice.
So far, we've covered two of the masculine trinity, Brahma and the avatars of Vishnu. Now let's turn our attention to the feminine side of things, and as you will recall, there is also a feminine trinity, and we'll talk in some detail about the feminine trinity. But first, let's look at the idea that the very nature of power is feminine. Throughout East as well as Western spiritual writings, there is a masculine bias. God is mostly referred to as He. God the Father is much more referred to than God the Mother. The great gurus and teachers and masters are usually described as men. There are some exceptions, of course. Mother Mary is revered by many Christians worldwide, reinforcing an active feminine principle in the spiritual realm. And the Chinese archetype Kuan Yin is revered by more people cumulatively than live in all of Japan. And finally, there is a mantra that we will talk about in great detail later, called the Gayatri Mantra, for producing illumination, that is practiced by both Hindus and Buddhists, and is taught as primarily feminine in nature. So we do have some attention in the world to the aspect of the feminine as a spiritual power. But the ancient East is much more specific. They say that all power is feminine in nature. The power of the planets to revolve around the sun. The power of the earth to grow plants and evolve creatures. In us, the power of the will to move even an arm or a leg. The power to think even one thought, they would say, requires the power of the feminine. They say that because within us, there is a small power cell at the base of the spine called the Kundalini Shakti. And it is the source of our power, both mundane and spiritual. The Kundalini is shown as a sleeping power cell that awakens in stages. And it may awaken in stages over many lifetimes and arrive at the point where it sends a mysterious energy up the spine. And it makes its way up the spine over the course of several lifetimes until finally it bursts through the top of the spine and into the brain, and we become completely transformed. It is at that point that we enter another stage of consciousness, where our understanding of reality changes permanently. But that's quite a ways down the road. Where we are here and now, most of us only have a small degree of our Kundalini awake, enough to run our nervous system, enough to circulate the blood, energize the prana. When it becomes a little more active, we may find that we develop the power to heal. Some people may develop psychic abilities and other things that we have come to call gifts of the spirit. At the macrocosmic level for a moment, we know from modern physics that all of matter is really composed of mostly space. And when we break this matter down, we find particles and charge, electrons, an electrical charge, and energy, protons, a form of electrical charge, energy, and neutrinos, and all of the other subparticles. So that if you take the physical universe and break it down to its lowest constituents, you have energy held in patterns of configuration. And in this sense, the ancient Vedic wisdom would agree. They would tell you that the entire universe is the body of Divine Mother, which is their way of saying it is energy held in patterns of configuration. So although much of the spiritual history has been written with a masculine bias, the greatest evidence for the great feminine and the feminine being the nature of power comes from those who have realized it in their own person and taught it and written scriptures about it. Most of the major religious figures of the East talk about the nature of power as feminine, naming names Paramahamsa Ramakrishna, Paramahamsa Yogananda, Paramahansa Muktananda, the great guru of gurus Shivananda, all wrote and taught that the nature of power is feminine. What these great teachers also told us is that the kundalini shakti of a woman is naturally awake, while in most men, we must work to awaken it. Many of the spiritual disciplines, including the ones involving mantra, involve attracting the kundalini energy from the base of the spine to activate the petals of the chakras where the mantras are vibrating. So as we chant mantra, we are saying, "Come, Kundalini, we have prepared you to accept your power, to energize our chakras." And then the Kundalini begins its journey, and we begin to evolve. Now, in Far Eastern spiritual circles, the nature of the power as feminine has been known for centuries. And in fact, there was a discipline that grew up called Tantra that was originally practiced in the priests. It was a distasteful practice, actually. Women concubines were used in sexual rituals that were designed to take their kundalini, which was naturally awake, and awaken the man's kundalini, much like one candle lighting another. The problem was that the women themselves were of no intrinsic value in the ceremony. They were used and then discarded. Now, in true spirituality, to think that you can make progress at the expense of another or at the expense of a different sex means that you have missed the point entirely. Most of the time, of course, these tantric practices didn't work. And although sometimes there were attempts at sexual experience without climax, the larger spiritual dimensions of Tantra were unrealized. Now, I had read about Tantra for years in various spiritual books and scriptures, but it wasn't until I met a teacher from India with an organization in this country called the American 3HO Organization that I began to have a clear understanding of what Tantra is. I was a new priest in an organization. I hadn't learned any of my priestly rituals whatsoever. And I was meditating one day shortly after having arrived when one of the other members of the organization came in and told me that we had a distinguished visitor in the shrine room. Well, I was a bit nervous, I can tell you, because I didn't know any of the rituals. And I went in the shrine room, and there was a man who looked like he was 6 feet 8 tall, with a huge turban on his head, daggers at his belt, rings on his fingers, an entourage of half a dozen people in tow, 2 cushions on the floor. He sat on one of them, his entourage sat behind him. The other one was obviously for me, and 2 women, members of the organization who happened to be there, sat behind me. There we were, mano y mano. The problem was, I had absolutely no idea what I was doing. I had broken my arm and it was sitting in a cast at my side, when the man opposite me spoke. "How did you break your arm?" Not, "Hello, how are you?" But, "How did you break your arm?" I truthfully told him I'd been playing with a group of kids and swung on a rope and hit a tree and it had broken. And then he pulled his head back a bit and with a little sneering curl of his lip said, "What kind of man are you playing with kids?" Inside I said, "Oh boy. I could get into a real horn-mashing contest here if I'm not careful." So I told the truth and I said, "Well, I'm just a kid at heart, really. So I was a kid playing with other kids." At that, his whole demeanor changed. And he indicated, "That's most beautiful." And we had a wonderful conversation. It was a cloudy day outside, kind of sultry, packed in and intense, but not enough moisture to produce rain, and he leaned slightly toward me, speaking to one of the people at his entourage, and said, "There's too much energy in the air. The spine can't hold it all. I wish it would rain or something." And I sat there as if an electric current had been turned on in my brain, because there unfolding before my mind's eye was the understanding that he worked with the energy of nature. This was a master teacher of Kundalini Yoga, Yogi Bhajan, and in a few short phrases, he taught me the true nature of Tantra. It's nothing more than working with the feminine energy that abundantly exists in nature. And after he made that statement, he bowed towards me, bowed towards the altar, got up, and left. And from that day, more than 25 years ago, I still vividly have in my mind the understanding and the teaching that he gave me that day about Tantra. It had nothing at all to do with sex, and everything to do with working with the abundant feminine energy that exists in nature and in ourselves in the form of the Kundalini at the base of the spine. The problem with the priests of India is that they had personalized the Shakti into one individual and had missed the big picture. Yogi Bhajan showed the big picture, and I'm sure he teaches it to all of his students, that the abundant energy of nature is the true goal of all tantric practices, the feminine energy that exists in nature, and finally in us. There is an ancient mantra that says, "May she whose touch brings ecstasy, who activates the masculine itself, who opens the spiritual eye of wisdom, who is worshipped and revered by all of the highest realized sages, bless us and always serve our highest good." Here is that mantra. Sarva mangala mangalye shive sarvatta sarike sharanye trayambake gauri darayani namostute. So what happens as our Shakti begins to become more active, as we start to chant mantra, as we begin earnest and sincere spiritual disciplines? Well, the Shakti begins to wake at the base of the spine. It begins to push us on. Our life begins to change. We have no choice but to heed its call. The great sage Aurobindo once said, "It is she to whom all of nature dumbly calls." When Shakti begins to move, the extent of our ignorance about things spiritual becomes abundantly clear, because whole new categories of choices begin to present themselves. We know that we must move from our comfortable positions because our life has changed in some way. We know this because sometimes there is upheaval, sometimes there is revelation, sometimes there is great joy, sometimes there are questions which appear in our mind seemingly out of nowhere, and sometimes they are answered. Sometimes we meet powerful people who show us whole new ways of relating to and thinking about life, whose Shakti is powerfully awake, and we realize we're missing something. Sometimes we ourselves become empowered in new ways, and sometimes we have a realization that begins to move us in a new direction. Ultimately, the movement of this divine Kundalini Shakti brings us to the place where all questions are answered, where tears are dried, where love resides. It leads us to the place of knowledge. It may put us in contact with the great ones, the celestials. It may bring us to understandings of higher levels of reality. And it may lead finally to the doorway passing through which we disappear from this world altogether and start another journey that begins when liberation on the earth ends. There are six kinds of Shakti which have been outlined by H.P. Blavatsky in her work, The Secret Doctrine. We'll go through them one by one. First is Para Shakti. This is a force which exists throughout the universe, and its principal attributes are heat and light. Second, Gnana Shakti. This is the power of the intellect, of wisdom, of which there are two main divisions. First, the knowledge of material conditions, which involves the power of the mind in interpreting sensation, recalling ideas and experiences through memory, the power of the mind in associating in coherent categories of thought. The second is the power of Gnana, intellect, free from material concerns, where we are able to tune into other times and places through clairvoyance and through psychometry, which is touching of objects and being able to tune in to other places in time. The third kind of Shakti is called Iccha Shakti, or the power of will. Here the mind sends instructions to nerves to accomplish a certain task by the power of Shakti. the nerves react to the impulses of these thoughts and relay instructions to the muscles. We're able to move from place to place, influence each other, influence events. We're able to transfer prana, for instance, if we're healers. We're able to teach great teachings if we're teachers. And thoughts and images are transferred through words and pictures. 4. Kriya Shakti, the power of manifestation. This is where we can create conditions such as good health or wealth. We can create art as a reflection of nature. We can even create parts of the universe, as we'll talk about later, a sage Vishwamitra did when he created a new realm for a king. The 5th kind of Shakti is Kundalini Shakti, the power inherent in everything. It's electricity and magnetism. It is the force which matches our internal conditions with some form of external reality and thereby is tied up with our karma, our thoughts and our actions determining our future births. And the 6th kind, which we are most concerned about in this course, is Mantra Shakti, the power of sound, particularly through the mystic formulas. It includes the power of music and the word, as we talked about in the beginning. Madame Blavatsky goes on to say that science has really investigated only 3 parts of these, Parashakti with its light and heat, Nana Shakti with its mind and intellect, and Kundalini Shakti through electricity and magnetism. And she says about the other 3, it is completely ignorant. So with this as a background of the general nature of power is feminine, let's examine the feminine trinity one by one. In the Vedic Hindu pantheon, there are a number of gods and goddesses. But as there is a masculine trinity, there is also a feminine trinity. And those 3 are Lakshmi, Durga, and Saraswati. Let's begin by talking about Lakshmi, the power of abundance. Early in this course, we talked about the meaning of abundance, that originally it meant having a good crop. It sometimes meant having a large enough family to be able to tend the crop. Then it became associated with enough crops left over to sell and have some prosperity. And from prosperity came the idea of wealth, the satisfaction and storing of material needs. And then abundance began to move into areas like peace and harmony within the family, the village, and the kingdom. People began to associate good health with a form of abundance, with having friends to associate with as a form of abundance. So although Lakshmi is certainly one of the feminine aspects that we would recognize as a mother figure, she is specifically that which stands for abundance in all of its forms. There is a mantra associated with that abundance, and it is this. We've talked a little bit about it before. Om Shri Mahalakshmiye Swaha. Om Shri Mahalakshmiye Swaha. Om Shri Mahalakshmiye Swaha. Now, some of you may be saying, wait a minute, last time you used the word Namaha. You were correct. Remember when we were talking about the Saturn cycle and the movement of that planet of lessons around in its rotation around the sun? And that when it arrives back at the place that it occupied when we were born, it is said to begin a new Saturn cycle. When one reaches the Saturn cycle of 28, the ending changes from Namaha to Swaha because the center of the energy in the body also changes. I am older than 28, so therefore I use the mantra with Swaha. Both of them mean I salute, but they have different energy configurations. Technically, Swaha is feminine, and Namaha is neutral. If you have been working with the mantra Om Shri Mahalakshmiye Namaha, and you are over the age of 28, don't feel as if you did anything wrong. It will work, it just may take a little longer. If you're over the age of 28, using swaha increases its power for you and shortens the length of time for it to bear the kind of fruit you want. Let's go over the words in the mantra one by one. Om, you recall, is the seed sound for the chakra at the brow center. And for most of the mantras, you will find, it stands as a prefix. Because ultimately, we want all of our energy to be focused and centered there. We want our consciousness to be centered there. Shreem. You remember from our discussion of seed sounds that shreem is the seed sound for abundance, represented by the anthropomorphized feminine principle, Lakshmi. Shreem. Maha means great. Maha has two contexts, but here it means great both in quantity and in quality. And the next word is Lakshmi. Again, that's the principle of abundance. So you see, by adding maha before Lakshmi, we say we want great abundance, great both in quantity and great in quality. And swaha means, I salute. Here again is the mantra. Om Shri Mahalakshmiye Swaha. Om Shri Mahalakshmiye Swaha. Om Shri Mahalakshmiye Swaha. Several years ago, I was down in Arizona, and I did a Lakshmi ceremony, and I taught people this mantra. And a week later, I got a phone call from one of the women who had been working with this mantra, and out of the blue, she got a call from a person who owed her some money and was trying to track her down so that she could pay her. Although I personally had never chanted directly for prosperity, I had at one time, as you'll remember, used the mantra Om Gam Ganapataye Namaha to try to eliminate any obstacle standing between me and proper employment. Well, about 2 years ago, I had a change in my circumstances, they like to say, and I realized that I needed to generate some capital, and there were a number of directions I could move in, and I wasn't quite sure which path to pursue. So I decided that I would practice what I preach and do Om Shri Mahalakshmiye Swaha. Om Shri Mahalakshmiye Swaha. Om Shri Mahalakshmiye Swaha. So I began to chant the mantra. Now, I'm a fellow, as I said before, who, when I make a decision to work with the mantra, I tend to work with it all the time. Getting up in the morning, it immediately comes to my lips. If I'm around other people, quietly I say the mantra, interiorly. While I'm brushing my teeth, while I'm shaving, while I'm in the shower, while I'm having breakfast, I may be vacuuming, I may be driving my car, I may be doing grocery shopping, any number of things. Om Shri Mahalakshmiye Swaha. Om Shri Mahalakshmiye Swaha. I decided to do it for 40 days, as I have suggested to you, and do it as much as I could during that 40 days. After 2 weeks, I received a call from some friends who were traveling around to various whole life expos across the country. They had reserved booths, and they were selling their wares and products at the booth. They had one that was in a town fairly close to me, and they said, "Why don't you come up and sell some of your books and tapes at our booth? We'd like to see you, and we'd all have a good time." So I took them up on their offer, took my materials, and did very well. And the whole time I'm chanting, Om Shri Mahalakshmiye Swaha. Om Shri Mahalakshmiye Swaha. Upon my return, I got a call from a potential consulting client and had a new assignment. Om Shri Mahalakshmiye Swaha. I completed the 40-day sadhana, but the effort of that sadhana continued on. Within another 30 days after that, I, by seeming accident, ran into a woman who knew another woman in New York who called another woman in Southern California, and the next thing I knew, I had a literary agent who was excited about some of my writing projects. Shortly after that, I mean shortly, within 45 days, I had a book contract from Ballantine Wellspring Books. So I can tell you that although I've received stories from other people of how these mantras work, I now have one of my own for the Mahalakshmi mantra. If you are having some reversal financially, or if you want guidance among several kinds of opportunities concerning your financial decisions, I highly recommend that you undertake repetition of this mantra. Now, if time is short, you can say, I'm going to work with this mantra as much as I can for 7 days, and you will get some kind of result. For the best result, I always recommend the classical 40-day discipline, either doing it 108 times in the morning or 108 times at night, or a combination of those two and saying it as much as you can. In my experience, this mantra will produce abundance in one form or another. You may be wondering, if I work with this mantra, how fast should I chant it? Should my 108 take me 2 minutes, 5 minutes? Should I say it very slowly and make it 10 minutes long? No, there is no general rule. Say it at a pace that is comfortable for you and that does not blur its meaning for you. You want to say it with attention, and you want to say it with intention. If you try to race through and say it as quickly as you can, then you might find your emphasis is more on speed of repetition than focus of intention on repetition. So say your mantra at a rate that's comfortable for you, and try to keep some part of your mind focused on the object of your desire. The second member of the Great Feminine Trinity is Durga. Sometimes people will talk about Kali, but Durga is much more accessible as an aspect of Kali. Durga is the divine protectress. It is she who, as we discussed earlier, is beautiful to the seeker after truth and terrible to those who might harm the seekers. Seated riding on a tiger, 100 arms, each with a different weapon, but with a beatifically beautiful face and light streaming forth, she is often represented and portrayed. The mantra for Durga is Om Dum Durga Ye Namaha. Om Dum Durga Ye Namaha. Om Dum Durga Ye Namaha. Om is the prefix, as we've said before. Dum is the seed sound. Durga is the anthropomorphized principle of protection. Ye at the end is a Shakti activating sound. Ye. Kids automatically understand this. When they're playing, yay, and each time they say it, they're releasing a small amount of energy from the base of their spine. Instinctively, they know that this sound brings energy. Om Dum Durga Ye Namaha. Now, I've told you the rule about when you're at the age of 28, you change from Namaha to Swaha. All rules have their exceptions. This is one of them. This mantra always stays with a Namaha ending. Om Dum Durga Ye Namaha. Om Dum Durga Ye Namaha. I taught a college course on the power of mantra, and one of the students in the class, Rick, was very attracted to the feminine trinity, and he decided to undertake a 40-day discipline with each of the feminine trinity. When he had finished Lakshmi, he began with great zeal his Durga mantra sadhana. Om Dum Durga Ye Namaha. And some weeks later, he told me of an incident that happened. He was 3 weeks into his discipline on Durga when he went to a rock concert of one of his favorite groups. As he drove in the parking lot, he said he felt this intense, sharp pain which stayed as a steady ache in his solar plexus. Automatically, he began to chant silently to himself,
Om Dum Durgaye Namaha. Om Dum Durgaye Namaha.
He said that immediately the pain in his solar plexus subsided, but he continued to chant the mantra. They pulled into their parking place, which was probably two full blocks away from the arena, and began to weave their way through the cars and the people that were also making their way towards the concert. At one point, he changed rows and came across a woman who was lying on the ground, and she was in pain. She was also holding her stomach. He helped her sit up and began to chant out loud, Om Dum Durgaye Namaha, and stayed with her for 3 or 4 minutes, and her pain also subsided. He helped her get back in her car, and she decided to forego the concert and return home. After he'd gone about another block, he saw some people doing some questionable activities on the rear part of their station wagon, and as he turned to move away, he saw some police approaching, and he went back to warn them that maybe they would want to cease their activities. And they did, and the police passed by without stopping, and no harmful effects for anyone. As he relayed the story to me, his face broke out in a huge grin, and he said, I guess Durga wanted a lot of people protected that night. I couldn't argue with him. Om Dum Durgaye Namaha. The third member of the great feminine trinity is Saraswati. I call her the secret Shakti of the Himalayas. The reason I do that is because the Eastern teachers will be only too happy to talk to us about Lakshmi and give us the abundance that we may need, or to talk to us about Durga and give us mantras for protection. But when it comes to Saraswati, I've heard time and again, well, we'll talk about that a little later. And yet Saraswati is the name that some of the high Eastern sages take as part of their name, appending her name to the end of their name. Why should this be? It is because Saraswati represents a route to understanding spiritual as well as material, personal power through speech. Referred to as the goddess of speech, Vach, in the primordial sense, she is that which is quoted as, in the beginning was the word in Christianity. To the Kabbalists, she is the ineffable name. Madame Blavatsky, in talking about Saraswati, refers to her as the goddess of hidden wisdom. She goes on to say in The Secret Doctrine, every mantra can assume a visible shape and manifest itself objectively and creatively because of the power of Saraswati. There is an old disputation, then, that evolved over time. Which is greater, mind or divine speech? The discussion finally ends at the place where speech ends and mind begins. In terms of you and me going up the spine, we have the speech mechanism at the throat chakra. When we move to the brow center, the sixth chakra, on the eyebrows between the eyes, we have left the realm of speech and entered the world of mind. When we reach this point, mind is superior to everything else. But the minute we enter the phenomenal world, that is, this cosmos with its teeming diversity, then speech becomes superior as an enabler of the mind. So desires may come from the mind, but they are made manifest by spoken or by subtle speech. At its core, mantra is magical speech and is ruled by the Saraswati principle. Saraswati is referred to as the essence of the Vedas and the essence of the great Gayatri mantra for illumination, which we'll talk about a little bit later. She has other names in the Vedas: eloquence, transcendental knowledge. Saraswati is known as speech in every aspect, the transcendental word, noble one, power of immense being, the wish-fulfilling cow, there's a quaint one, seed of the word, diversity of the wealth of the spoken word. Shown sitting on a lotus, crescent moon on her forehead, she holds a musical instrument, indicating that those who want to follow music should chant her mantra. She holds a book, indicating those who wish to open up some field of knowledge should chant her mantra. She holds a rosary, or a mala, as they say in Sanskrit, indicating that those of you who are serious about making spiritual progress should at some time devote some time to saying her name. Her seed sound, as we have talked before, is I'm. And the simple mantra for her is Om I'm Saraswat Ye Swaha. Om I'm Saraswat Ye Swaha. Om I'm Saraswat Ye Swaha. Om is the seed prefix, seed sound of the brow center. I'm is the seed of Saraswati. Saraswati is the great feminine principle. Ye is a Shakti activating sound. And Swaha or Namaha mean I offer or I salute. At the end of the Saraswati mantra, return to the Namaha or Swaha division according to your age. If you are under the age of 28, Om I'm Saraswat Ye Namaha. Om I'm Saraswat Ye Namaha. And if you are 28 or older, Om I'm Saraswat Ye Swaha. Om I'm Saraswat Ye Swaha. In the Rig Veda, there is a quotation, as it were, from Saraswati. It says, I, Saraswati, as divine speech, make those whom I love formidable. One a Brahman, one a Rishi, another a sage. By the power of mantra, they follow my path of divine speech, and I enter into them. Om I'm Saraswat Ye Swaha. Om I'm Saraswat Ye Swaha. So here then are some of the significant points relating to Saraswati. The Saraswati principle governs all spiritual pursuits according to the ancient texts. Spiritual teachers transmit the power of mantra through the Saraswati principle. Followers of the path of intellectual understanding, sometimes called power of the mind, are similarly governed by this principle. The transmission of a powerful Shakti, as recorded by many famous teachers, such as Yogananda, Muktananda, Ramakrishna, also relate to the Saraswati principle. Some mantras are what I call freight train mantras. I call them freight train mantras because they're very long. And there are three freight train mantras that we'll talk about throughout this course. Here is one called the Maha Vidya mantra. It is a mantra of Saraswati. It is called Mahavidya because it is known as the Queen of Knowledge Mantra, bringing spiritual understanding as well as worldly knowledge. And it is full of seed sounds. I'll chant it for you twice because, as I say, it's a long mantra. If you wish, follow along in your booklet. I'm Hreem Shreem Kleem Saw, Kleem Hreem I'm Bloom, Stream Nila Tati Saraswati, Dram Drim Kleem Bloom Saw, I'm Hreem Shreem Kleem Saw, Hreem Swaha. Long, isn't it? One more time. I'm Hreem Shreem Kleem Saw, Kleem Hreem, I'm Bloom, Stream Nila Tari Saraswati, Dram Drim Kleem Bloom Saw, I'm Hreem Shreem Kleem Saw, Hreem Swaha. those of you to whom this mantra has an irresistible attraction, sit with your booklet, try over a period of days to memorize it if you can, and try to say it with concentration 25 times in the morning and 25 times at night. If you do this for 2 weeks, you will begin to feel an attunement with the mantra and be able to then undertake its repetition at a deeper level. I won't take time to explain all the different seed sounds that exist in this mantra, but I will say that if you are attracted to spiritual mystery or to a field of complex worldly understanding, this mantra can be helpful. There's one more short mantra called the Sri Chakra Mantra. Now, the Sri Chakra is a long and complicated subject. It essentially is the feminine force that exists throughout the universe. And the mantra, you would think for such a force, would be long, but it's not. It's very short. Om Shrim Shriye Swaha. Om Shrim Shriye Swaha. Om Shrim Shriye Swaha. I was on my way into my bank one day, and the teller who waited on me was a Korean woman. I spent some time in Korea. I learned a few Korean phrases. So we chattered back and forth for 30 seconds, and she said, "You should talk to George. George is the bank security guard, and he speaks some Korean too." So I said, "All right, I will." So I went over to George, and we got into a conversation which quickly moved into another realm altogether. George was a martial artist, and he asked me if I worked with any other languages, and I told him, yes, I worked with a language called Sanskrit and something called mantra. And he said, "Oh, I heard of that. I have practiced martial arts, and so I'm aware of chi and kundalini and some of these things. Do you mind if I ask you a question?" I said, "No, not at all." And he poured out a story to me of how he had a relationship that had ended and caused him great pain, and he was still trying to recover from it. And in looking at him, I could see that all of his energy was centered in his masculine half. He'd completely neglected that part of him where the kundalini is, where the feminine nature resides. So I said, "I think I can help you. Here is a mantra. Om Shrim Shriye Swaha. Om Shrim Shriye Swaha. Om Shrim Shriye Swaha." Well, now, this is a fellow like me. I came back a week later, and he said, "I chanted the mantra an hour the first day, 4 hours the second day, and since that time, I've been chanting it all day long, and I have something to tell you." I was on the telephone talking to a woman friend of mine, and I was about to end the phone call when she said, "Please, don't stop. Let's go on talking for a while." And I said, "Why?" And she said, "Because there's something different about you. Something has changed. I don't know what it is. All I know is I want to keep talking with you." In 2 short weeks, he had changed his vibration so much, he had become so in tune with his feminine side, that now women, as opposed to keeping him at arm's length, wanted to keep talking with him because they sensed that he was in tune with his feminine side, and therefore also in tune with them. Om Shrim Shriye Swaha. Om Shrim Shriye Swaha. So that is the feminine trinity, understanding the feminine as the nature of power. We've talked about Lakshmi, the power of abundance, Durga, the power of protection, and Saraswati, the power of knowledge and the power of divine speech. But the object of power must be applied to something. It is applied within us as a route to expanding our consciousness. The end point of all spiritual disciplines is the expansion of consciousness, so that we become the full potential of what we are, really as a seed in our present state. That expansion of consciousness is known as Shiva. And that is what we will talk about as we continue.